Irreverent, entertaining, cool. You're listening to LA Talk Radio.
Listening to Writer's Block, only on LA Talk Radio.
Thank you to Mr. Rick Gilman for giving us all of the buffalo grass we can chew on for 50 minutes. And that was a piece of music, Buffalo Grass by Rick Gilman. And we are coming to you directly and live over live radio worldwide from Los Angeles, except that none of us are in Los Angeles. We have in Idaho, in Albuquerque, New Mexico, a Colorado, and a Houston, Texas. So welcome everybody, Miss Bobby G. Oh, Bobby with an I, Bobby Jean Bell, in Albuquerque, and of course my good friend and business partner and radio co-host, Mr. Richard Polidelli, in Fruta, Colorado. Hey, hey guys.
Hi. Hey, Jim, how's it going?
It is alive and kicking and hiding out in good old Star, Idaho. How's that?
Our condolences.
We're going to kick off the show with our new segment, which is called North Corner, Right Corner. And I get anybody to call in and ask questions of a writer, or a writer that is a guest can ask questions of writers, which Richard and I are one. Or we can ask questions of him, which he is also a writer. And, I'm not going to go into what else he does. Right now, he's a bum. I have to say it right now. He's a bum. But that's right. He's loving it. He's loving life. And you can ask us for about 10 minutes. You get anything you want to ask us, ask away. Bobby, you have any questions for us?
Well, I actually do, because the book that we read this week, there was quite an impact of fan fiction in this book. And you know, it's embarrassing to say that I really didn't know much about fan fiction. I think we maybe had one other author guest, but we talked a little bit about it. But went online, learned a little bit more about it. And so a gentleman, including our special guest, Freddy Cruz, talk to me about it. Was it?
Well, the book itself is a satire and dark fiction. It's dark humor / satire. So I was satirizing the world of fan fiction, and fan fiction would be when a rabid fan writes a fictitious story about whatever it is they are enamored with. So for instance, there is a One Direction, which was huge about 10-15 years ago. They had their directioners, that's their fandom, and you would have some that would be so in love with the guys that they would write fiction based on the band, and it would get raunchy and or crazy. And so I was kind of riffing on that world with the fictitious musician that was that's in my story. And that musician, and River, is I think he'd probably be a mix between Shawn Mendes, maybe Ed Sheeran, maybe a few more tattoos. So that's that world that I was kind of riffing on with the with the female love interest.
Mm-hmm. Bobby. Now, Richard, in fantasy and sci-fi and all, since part of fan fiction seems to create fandoms. Do you see that this is also a genre of writing for the area that you're very involved in?
Oh yeah, in fact, I know a lot of writers who are professional writers who create their own universes and their own stories who kind of delve into fan fiction. I mean, myself, I've written a Star Trek fan fiction, and it's up on my website. The rules are a little different because you're not allowed to sell it. You have to just put it out there. But, you know, if it's something that you really want to do, you do it. And it's kind of your love letter to whatever fandom you're into. I mean, I've seen Star Trek. I've seen Babylon 5, Star Wars, up until Disney got a hold of it and said, thou shalt not do one thing to our, you know, to our franchise. But, you know, back in the day, there's a lot of Star Wars fan fiction. So especially in those realms, because you have so many people who are into it, they're going to write that. And it's actually not a bad idea for somebody who wants to get into writing, is maybe do a little fan fiction, put it out there and kind of get some feedback on it. It can't hurt. But yeah, right. It's pretty prevalent out there.
It's actually a really good way to test your writing skills. Mm-hmm. When you really get down to it, it's a wonderful way to test your writing skills and see if people really are interested in what you have to say.
Now, if you're going to do fan fiction in an established universe or any other universe you're writing about, that would be my biggest thing that I would recommend. Right. Because if you goof something up, you will get it in spades from the people who live and breathe this stuff. So right. Yeah, it can have its perils. So just make sure you've really done your research on it.
Right, right. Which brings me to a question, Richard. And I've been wanting to ask you this for a while, and I forget every time we see each other. And science fiction, and I'm not, you know, I'm not a science fiction geek, or in any way, shape, or form, a writer of science fiction. But I often wonder, how often do you sit and ponder the names you're going to give planets and the names you're going to give solar systems and the names you're going to give characters? Because oftentimes, not only are they strangely unusual, but unreadable. And
yeah, you know, it will depend on what you're dealing in. If for my fan fiction in Star Trek, I'll just use that as an example. There are so many established worlds in there that you don't have to worry about it too much. Mm-hmm. You know, you can kind of draw off of what's come before. Klingon names, you want to give it something that begins with a K. You know, a Vulcan name, you'll start with an S, or so, you know, or the females will always start with a T. So you've got that to work with. You don't have to work at it so hard. But if you're building a new universe, like I did with StarQuest Fourth Age, you know, you have to sit down because you're dealing with a galaxy way off away. I didn't want to go there, but so you have to, you're building these world names and you're building the names of your characters that are going to kind of, they got to fit with it, because that way the language makes sense. Even putting it in the places and the right. People make some sort of blow to it. Otherwise you're going to lose your readers. So right. It really depends on what you're getting into, but you know, it takes a while.
And I imagine that, yeah, because I do the same thing. I write, as I'm writing a book, I any character I reintroduce that has an actual name to him, he gets listed on a Word doc and what he does. And so I can refer back to that Word doc for the guy's name. I don't know how you do it in sci-fi. I honest to God, I don't. You must have 16 pages of names.
Well, you know, locations.
Yeah, I mean, you have to sit down and almost build a Bible to, you know, sometimes it's a few pages. John Wright, when he created StarQuest, his Bible is up to 120, and it's mostly names and places, you know. And if you want to jump into StarQuest, where I did, it's a little tougher. There are some online tools that you can go, some websites, and you can say, all right, I'm looking for a name that kind of sounds like this language or that language. Mm-hmm. They have a fantasy one where you just say, you know, give me something that sounds like a dragon. And you hit a button and it'll start bringing up random names. You kind of look and you look and then you find one that kind of, hey, that sounds about right. So you can use that. When I'm writing real world, like the mysteries and the westerns, I go grab a phone book. Uh-huh. And I just to a page and okay,
and there's
a name right there. Let's go with that.
Well, now, I haven't grabbed a phone book yet, but yeah.
Now, in tonight's book, she has the author of the fan fiction piece that she romances. She has 700 followers on something called Wattpad. Are most fan fiction things printed on websites available, you know, or are people actually publishing you know, where you buy it to read it, publishing fan fiction, traditionally, Great. Conventionally.
Yeah, go ahead, Bray.
Oh, no, I was going to say, yeah, you just, you, and I've heard people call it Wattpad and Wattpad.
It
looks like Watt, like an electrical Watt.
It does look like Watt.
But, and when I talk to people who are into this kind of stuff, it's like the caramel-caramel dichotomy where you say caramel, I say caramel. You say Wattpad, I say Wattpad. And so I don't know that there's a right or wrong way, even though it clearly looks like it's Wattpad. But
yeah.
People are subscribing to, say, a fanatic of Star Trek on Wattpad. And I can follow along as he reveals chapter by chapter by chapter. It's almost like Kindle Bella. It was like Kindle Bella before Kindle Bella became a thing.
Yeah.
So you just update whenever. And that's how people get their stories. Now, E.L. James wrote 50 Shades of Grey as a Twilight fanfic. And that was how she got picked up. She self-published and ended up selling a bajillion copies of her Twilight fanfic. And now it's, you know, it's the juggernaut.
Yeah. Yeah. And now in my case with my Star Trek, originally I did a chapter a week. Each week was a new chapter for the all three parts. And then when I got done with it, there's actually a website that's devoted to nothing but Star Trek fan fiction. And I'm sure some of the other areas probably have some people sit there put on this website. There's some amazing stories and some amazing covers that I'm seeing on the Star Trek one. So, you know, I did it on my website. I submitted mine to the Star Trek site. There's Wattpad, whatever we want to call it. There's all these different options. I would imagine, as long as the property allows fan fiction and you're not charging for it, you could probably put it on Kindle Bella, or you could even just package the thing as an ebook and you can put it up for free on some websites. So there's a lot of different ways to do it.
That's so interesting.
I'm on the TrekFanfiction.net website. I don't know if that's the one that you're talking about, but there's a Trek Writers Guild.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
That's
You know, interesting you mentioned Star Trek, Richard, because I and Freddie, because I years ago, years ago, when I was much younger, Star Trek, of course, with all the different directors they had on the series, finally put out the Fleet Manual. And they did that for the directors to know what each thing did on the consoles. So when the director said, well, Sulu, here, hit that button and go into warp drive. And Sulu would say, no, that doesn't go into warp drive. That puts up the shields. This goes into warp drive. And that was one of the biggest selling things. I mean, it was great. It was absolutely wonderful.
I used to have a copy.
I think I still have one someplace.
Too many moves it got away from me, but yeah,
it was a great book. It was a lot of fun to read.
That's the kind of thing you need, though, especially like I said, if you're going into an established franchise like a Star Trek, you need to get that kind of information and get it right. Otherwise, you know, you're going to get hammered and nobody's going to read your stuff.
Exactly. So
that is the perils of fan fiction.
Exactly. Okay, we're going to have to cut it here, guys. Thank you so much for your input. And we're looking at 14 minutes past the hour of 6. And it is, of course, time to run a Tuscany Bay ad. So this has been brought to you by Tuscany Bay Books, and we'll be right back after. This is a brief word from Tuscany Bay Books.
You are traveling through another dimension, a dimension not only of sight and sound, but of mind. A journey into a wondrous land whose boundaries are that of imagination. That's the signpost up ahead. Your next stop, the Book Publishing Zone. Hey everyone, Richard Polinelli here from Tuscany Bay Books. Look, I know you finished writing your book, and if you're like a lot of other first-timers, and I was the same way back in the day, you don't know what to do next, and you're feeling a little anxious. But that's where Tuscany Bay Books comes in. For it and get it out to all the booksellers for you. That way, you can get back to doing the most important thing, writing your next book. So head over to TuscanyBayBooks.com, fill out the submission form, and let's get you to the book published zone.
And we are back with our guest. And it is now 15 minutes after the hour of 6. And we are in the studio with our guest tonight, Mr. Freddie Cruz. You know him, you love him. He was a longtime radio host and DJ in the Houston area. He now is an author. He's an animal advocate. He's a lover of new music, old books, grandma, and a host of Freddie's Huge Ask podcast. Welcome to the Writer's Block, Mr. Freddie Cruz. Hey, Freddie.
Good evening.
Welcome.
Everybody, I would say good evening, California, but it's we're all over the place. I got
all over, yeah. We're everywhere.
We're everywhere.
Yeah. We're like super chicken. We're everywhere. He's everywhere.
Love it. Don't you love the 21st century technology has us connected? All these voices, yet it's out of LA Talk Radio.
That is correct. Yes, LA Talk Radio. We are, of course, the largest in the marketplace in Los Angeles, and we are proud to say that. And I'm happy to pass that word along. We go out to a lot of listeners, so I'm hoping that you get something out of tonight's show. Freddie, we were just talking a little bit ago about a book you had written, and it's wow. Now I've lost it.
They canceled the DJ.
They canceled the DJ. It's an interesting. It is definitely a dark satire. That I will give you. And of course, as we know, Bobby with an I over there, isn't it? Richard and I talk every week, and Bobby and I do too, and we kind of go over the books that we're going to be talking about that night. And Richard and I came to the conclusion that there really wasn't any protagonist that we really liked a lot. They all were kind of like snivelers, I'm not sure what was going on with that one there. Freddie, but do you want to give us a little bit about this book and what it's about?
Yeah, sure. Well, the whole Bobby with an eye thing, it's worth mentioning that, and you talk about not likable characters. I think likable characters are boring. So if you're going to read, they canceled the DJ hoping for some sort of a feel good story. Definitely not. That's
no.
Why it's satire and dark humor novel. But, you know, Bobby with an I, there's a sentence within the first 10 pages where it says, "Somebody and it with I tend to be strippers, Bobby, Brandy, Bambi, Brittany, Diddy, and so on and so forth." And I, and of course, coming onto the show, I'm like, oh my God.
Well, it's like, it's just, and I don't even know what to call you. And he goes, "Bobby with an I."
As a reader, okay, you got me. I got to that sentence and I'm like, okay, I'm in for the read.
Oh no, my first thought was I am going to have so much fun with post-production video this week.
Oh yeah.
Well, I was telling you all before we started rolling this evening that my developmental editor kind of sort of recommended that I pull that line out because, you know, it's,
I wouldn't have. I'm glad you left it in.
Well, perfect.
Actually, tell us what a developmental editor does, because I don't know that we've used that term.
We've never used that term before.
Yeah. So tell us about. Yeah. Tell us about that.
Okay. Sure. Yeah. So a developmental editor is working on plot holes, character development. Plugging in all the things that need to be plugged in, having their author remove and add to the story, so on and so forth. So as an indie author, it is imperative for us to make sure that we get it right because we don't have the big five at our disposal. So
right.
We have to make sure that we're getting all this stuff right. Which takes me to my previous novel, which was my debut novel. I had spent 6 months on it, tweaking it and fine-tuning it, and I just felt that there was something missing and I couldn't put my finger on it. And I thought, well, you know what? I need some help. And so that was when I started Googling all these different websites. Hey, I need an editor. I need someone to help me figure out what's going on with the plotting, et cetera, et cetera. Came across Readzy, which is kind of like a match.com for authors and editors and cover designers and formatters and marketing. And so I learned what a developmental editor was. And the first for the first book and for this one. They both kicked my tail and I loved it. Oh my gosh, I loved it because I'm one of those guys who I used to be very, very sensitive to feedback. And when it comes to something that's got your name on it, that's going to literally be in the world, in the zeitgeist, till the day you die and beyond. Hello, hello, Robert Frost, or who probably had got it right, or at least as close to getting it right as possible.
Mm-hmm.
So yeah, that's why you work with a developmental editor. If you're a first time author and you don't know where you want to go, where you want to take your plot, or maybe you've got a character or a protagonist, an antagonist, if you've got an anti-hero that you maybe feel is a little bit too bad of an anti-hero, or maybe a too bit of a goody two shoes to be an anti-hero, this is where a developmental editor can really help you fix the problems with your story. Now, with a developmental editor, that's not going to be copy editing, making sure you're within the Chicago School of Manuscript or whatever it is. And then you've got your proofreader. So you basically make all the rounds by yourself. You go to the developmental round, copy editing, then proofreading, and then voila, you've got magic. You got something.
Good, bad, or indifferent. We all know that.
Yeah, it's the book, it's the story. Whether or not it's a good one or a bad one or a great one or a terrible one, there's the rub.
We never know if it's going to, I mean, we may like it. Our editors may like it. My wife may like it. But, you know, they're not buying the book.
Yeah.
So, yep.
Yeah. And there's nothing like that feeling of putting a book out for the first time and waiting for that first review to come in and wondering, what's it going to be? You know, because you'll know with the first two or three reviews if you got it right or if you've got a problem. So
right.
But the time from release to review is always a little nerve-wracking.
Right.
Yeah, absolutely. And you know, I'll go back to the first one, and they canceled the DJs. Okay. I will tell you my rookie novel, I got a review from a local publication and it got murdered. And I wasn't sure what to think. Like, well, I know what I thought, but when I read it, I'm like, oh my God, this is like the movie Chef.
Yeah.
The dude was poetic. Oh my God, it was the most beautiful negative review, but it was my work. It's like,
Yeah. Which, you know, which brings me into a comment about reviews in general. I don't live on reviews. I you know, I may read one or two.
Yeah.
Sometimes I don't make a habit of. We have a writer that's on here with frequency, or was a couple years back, and she used to look at every single review and to drive out a bad review. Oh, what do you do? How do I fix this? You can't fix a bad review. How are you gonna fix it? Yeah. Rewrite the book? No.
I check once a month.
Yeah, I do. I look. If I get a new review, I read it. You know. And then I move forward. I will tell you, though, for your edification, I my last book that I wrote, Jefferson's Chance, I happened to pick up the reviews and I read it, and it came from an ex-wife. And I thought, holy shit, you know, she gave it 5 stars.
Wow, there you go.
She said, I've never read a Western book in my life. I loved this book. I cried. I laughed. She said it was a wonderful story, and I'll read all of his books now.
There you go.
Love it.
This is somebody who dips me.
I do is the, you know, get lost in the reviews to another that your DJ does in the book is getting hung up on what he read on social media. And for whether you're a DJ or a writer or anybody who's out in the public like we are, that's what he did was the absolute don't do.
Yeah.
So I liked how you kind of gave us the what not to do with social media.
Yeah, yes.
Well, and he makes the comment on the internet whip, or somebody says to him I'm the internet whipping boy. And I thought, how many readers are going to relate to that? In their own world of just their own network, you know, maybe not thousands of people, but you put it out on Facebook to your Facebook friends or whatever you're following, that I would imagine a lot of folks have felt at times that they're the enemy.
I mean, you know, your dog died. Crappy review in the book.
So that's a great comment, Richard. Tell us a little bit about what happens, without spoiler alerts. What makes him there? Puts him there.
I'm gonna let Freddie do that because he knows this book better than I do.
Okay, so what sends him kind of over the edge is he has an encounter with a woman with the love interest, Bobby with an I. And so he's nervous, but it's also a combination of nerves and some bad food. And he has an incident at a radio station event that happens to go viral, and it's very embarrassing for him. And so he ends up under public scrutiny. So if you think in terms of like a fail video on YouTube and on Twitter and then on Snapchat and then on Instagram, and then you're going viral, Comedy Central, you end up a meme. And so he's embarrassed. And really, it kind of speaks to the human experience, where I don't think, and you hit the nail on the head there, Bobby, we're in our own bubbles. We're in our own community. So when you put something out there, you don't expect, you expect your bubble to kind of go along. You don't expect something like, you know, something bad to happen to you within your bubble. Now, obviously, this was out of his control, what happened to him. And so it got recorded, because everyone's on their phones recording everything, and anything that is out of the ordinary is what's going to get a lot of attention. What happened to AC got a lot of attention, because this was at a radio station contest where his love interest won a bunch of money worth of free shoes. And so that happened. But it worked out for him, because it up now him them to score her new boyfriend, who was the fictitious River Bronzewell, and then that sets the stage for the back half of the book, which is a train wreck.
Yeah. We're going to call it right there. We'll be back with you in just a second. Don't go away. And you're listening to LA Talk Radio. This is the Writer's Block, and we'll be right back with you. But first, brief word from LA Talk Radio. If you have never listened to LA Talk Radio, then you need to treat yourself to one of the best online live radio stations around. If you have listened to talk radio and, let's be honest, found yourself saying, I can do that better, well then, LA Talk Radio wants you. See, we have 50-minute slots available all day, Saturdays and Sundays included, and we are looking to fill those slots with high-quality broadcasts from talk hosts that are in the know. If you think you have what it takes, go to www.becomeahost. Then just follow the simple instructions. Before you know it, you'll be joining the legion of radio folks that got their start right here at LA Talk Radio. That's www.latalkradio.com. You have something to say. Now let's hear it. LA Talk Radio. And we are back. It is now 6:30, and we are joined by our guest tonight, Mr. Freddie Cruz from Houston, Texas. And if you want to call and talk to Freddie, if you can get through, the number in the studio here is 323-203-0815. And again, that number is 323-203-0815. And if you can't get through, we apologize. It could be a glitch. It could be an engineer sleeping. Could be anything. So we don't know. But if you get through, great. If not, we apologize beforehand. Okay, Fred, let's talk a little ways of writing. I get up very early, you know, 3:30 to start working on the story. And sometimes I'll nap during the day and then go back and work on the story a little bit. Richard, I know you're all over the board. You write when you get a chance.
Yeah, if I get 2 hours put together, I sit down and start writing. So
yeah. Now what about you, Freddie? When do you like to write?
I'm more of a Richard. I can, you know, I'll make it work whenever I can. There's no set time. With the manuscript that I'm currently working on now, I went from writing on vacation to waking up at 4:30 in the morning to crank out a few pages longhand to, writing during the day. I'm in between jobs. So I finished the manuscript, working just feverishly doing the album and now I have, you know, an hour and a half blocks. So that's kind of my process. It's just whenever. Sometimes it's written under the influence of coffee, sometimes under the influence of an adult beverage or five. So
not an adult beverage. You know, sometimes we do this show under the influence of adult beverages.
But I have no idea what you're talking about. I deny all accusations.
Do you have a do you have a workout that you like to hit during when you're writing, or is it just when you're done
It's when I'm done, I'm done. Now, what I will say is that with the first book, it was typed out on my Mac, so I was able to count every word, and it typically was between 800 and 1200 words per writing session. But then I found out that my favorite time was his manuscripts. So then I started writing everything longhand. So it's usually between 3 and 6 pages in one sit down session. And that is usually in my handwriting is all over the place. So it's usually anywhere between 700 and 1200 words that I figured out that's what I'm writing.
How do you choose your storylines?
You know, for the Cancel the DJ,
that's an obvious one, but
in that plot line, you know, we had a contest in my previous employer here in Houston. We had a contest that was slot machine themed, and it was at a shoe store where we were actually giving, it was one of the places we had three $10,000 grand prizes over the course of a summer. So once every month. And I thought to myself, wow, there's something here. And then one of my buddies who, and this is pre-COVID, at ACL, Austin City Limits Music Festival, was backstage, and he saw a woman that he thought he was hitting it off with. She was working for another publication, and he thought, well, wow, she's pretty cool. I think I might be getting her digits. Lo and behold, she ended up ditching this guy and blowing him off and leaving with the musician. Now, I thought, what can I do? Because that is hilarious. My friend is so awkwardly terrible with women. I got to make this worse. So that was how I came up with the storyline for They Canceled the DJ. So it's not based on actual events so much as it's just inspired by actual events. Just in these real situations.
Now, you know, you're a radio disc jockey. I was in newspapers for, you know, more years than I care to admit to tonight. Do you find yourself using a lot of incidents that you witnessed or people you encountered while you were working and using them in your stories and as kind of, you know, if not the story itself, as kind of background material to kind of weave into the story?
Absolutely. Even with the first one that has, you know, pretty much nothing to do with being a radio personality, there were real life instances where radio station was sent and I come across somebody in an Uber ride whose name was Hater. And this was a beautiful individual that I happened to speak with for 20 minutes in an Uber ride on the way to a radio station event. And I'm like, wow, this guy really gets it. He appreciates the United States in a way that I've never heard anybody articulate in my 40 plus years. And so that was how I ended up naming the main character for When America Fell Silent. So it's just little nuances, little things that don't necessarily have to do with the radio station, but it always ends up kind of going back to that.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Yeah. In my book, Reservations, I lived in the town it's set in. Mm. And worked out there. So a lot of places and people that I bumped into and encountered found their way into the book under obviously different names. But the one thing that I got in was in real life, the real life mayor and the real life newspaper editor or publisher hated each other. In fact, they made the news because they were filmed outside of a bank chasing each other around a car.
Oh, gosh.
So as I'm writing Reservations and I want, you know, the newspaper publisher to be kind of a jerk. And I'm not really, you know, the mayor's not all that great either. I'm thinking, well, let's weave this in with some changes and just use that toxic relationship to help set up these characters. So, you know, for a lot of new writers, I tell them, think back to things that you've seen, things that stick out in your memory of, you know, this was weird or wow, that was kind of dumb, and use it. You know, you can't do word for word, but you can use it.
Absolutely. And building off of that, I had an interview for my podcast with Ruby, who wrote Between Shades of, and she talks about, when I was preparing for the interview, she talks about young people getting their hearts broken and smashed and thrown to the ground and going through all the feelings, because that is what helps you as a storyteller. So if you want to be a storyteller and do this, whether it's full time or part time or just as a hobby where you don't ever have any intention of publishing anything, but if you want to tell stories and you want to make them good stories, you got to live that experience as a human being and have all the feelings. And that is what really shapes you as a storyteller.
You know, that's something that we don't often bring up on this show. And that's very, very, very good point, is that a lot of people don't get the fact that writers are storytellers. That's what we do. We tell a story. And people just think, well, you just sit back and pound on more keys. No, we're trying to put out the very best story that we know how.
Yeah. Well, and that's why I like storyteller better than the word author.
Yes. Yes. Yeah. Very great distinction, incidentally.
Thank you.
Now I know why you're a Mickey clan. Besides being a really nice guy, I mean, you know. We're going to go ahead and run our last commercial because there's a reading thing I want to get into as well. And then we're going to ask a question real quick of you, and then we'll be back. And we lost Bobby.
Yeah, I don't know what happened to her.
I don't know. She just kind of popped out.
She's writing.
And I had a great joke on her, too. I was going to say I keep having things with Bobby with an I, but Jim with an M is always around.
You know, I think she sensed a disturbance in the force and got out while she could.
Well, maybe got out while she still had her skin. You're listening to Dave Ward from Creative Edge Publicity. Okay, you've written a book. How are you going to get your name out there? Well, the folks at Creative Edge Publicity will. That's their job. They aren't going to sell your book. They don't want to sell your book, but they will take your brand from the ground up so you are known in your genre and within the writer's community. They'll do this by using relationships with contacts they've made in TV, in radio, podcast, and publishing to get your name and your brand recognized. So why are you waiting? Contact Creative Edge Publicity at www.creative-edge.services or email Mickey Mickelson at mickey.creativeedge@gmail.com. Creative Edge, it's your work and it's your brand. Why would you trust it to anyone else? Creative Edge Publicity.
And right now we're going to ask the question, of course, that is on everyone's lips. Freddie, have you ever had writer's block? And if you have, how did you get out of it?
I have writer's block quite often, to the point where I will get a couple of pages into a manuscript and then stop writing because imposter syndrome takes over. And I ask myself, without really trying to, who the heck do you think you are? Why do you think you have a story to tell? Why do you think you have anything interesting to communicate to the world? And then I just stop. And then what happens is I will take a step outside, or I'll close the notebook away and stop writing, and I'll turn on the TV, or I'll play with my dog, and then I'll come back, and then I'll say, not today, Satan. I am going to write because I've got stories that will take something away from something that I write. And it might not be publishing week. It might not be that same week that I released the book. It might be in a year. It might be in 5 years. It might be next century for all I know. But there's going to be somebody out there who is going to think that I have touched them in a way that is going to move them and inspire them to do whatever it is that they feel is going to be something pivotal and important in their life. And that is the honor that I have as a storyteller. And you know what? And that right there is none of my business.
You know, it kind of segues. There's this, what I was going to say, kind of segues into a little section we want to do on what you expect from your readers and what you're trying to get across to your readers.
Yeah.
A good example is Robert Frost. I like Robert Frost's work, and everything I understand, but it's very moving emotionally.
Yeah.
And one of the best pieces that he ever wrote was Stopping by Woods on a Snowy Evening. I don't think there's anybody that doesn't know pieces of that poem. And it's been around for a long, long time. But I mean, he touches people in a way that I don't know what it is about that piece of work, but it just touches me. And I don't know about other people, but at any rate, when you're writing, are you writing for your reader? Are you writing to get something across to your reader, hoping they pull something out of your work, or is it writing for yourself?
I want to think that I'm writing for myself. Because if I write something that's, what do they say in the screenwriting world? If it's on the nose, I don't want to be one of those guys. When it felt like maybe I danced that line, yet I was writing it at a time when I was literally kind of feeling like, wow, you know, freedom of speech in America doesn't really seem to mean much anymore. Well, you know, instead of being angry about it or tweeting strangers on the internet about it, I figure why not use those emotions and try and create something that's entertaining and show the importance of free speech instead of beating somebody over the head about why it's important. And then with they canceled the DJ, there's a lot of, one of the quotes that I absolutely use is amor fati, which is a love of fate, which is something that Jay talks about. And there's a lot of that from me, because when I first started writing the manuscript for They Canceled the DJ, it was the weekend that I got that bad review from a publisher, from a publication that I did have a lot of respect for. And so I did a lot of soul searching. I gave myself some time to vent and to, you know, be emotional. And then I'm like, you know what? The only way to win is to write another book. Writing a book in and of itself is a win. Whether or not you sell, you know, that's all subjective. I mean, you know, I think it'd be cool. I don't know anybody who's gonna write a story and say, oh, I hate that.
You put it back.
The one thing to remember is writers, when you get criticism like you got from an unexpected source, and it comes as an ambush and it hurts.
Yeah.
But you got to remember, in most of those cases, the people who are taking the shots at you, they don't create anything. They don't bring anything to the table other than just harsh words.
Yeah, then a nasty comment, yeah.
In 5 years, 10 years, 20 years, what they said and everything they've done is going to be forgotten. Your book is going to be out there. And thanks to the way Amazon's set up, it's going to be out there for as long as you keep it out there.
Forever.
So you have created something that will stand the test of time.
Oh, absolutely.
Exactly.
They've done nothing. So I tell this to new writers is, you know, don't give them the power over you.
Exactly. And I have to say, I appreciate your use of amore fati. that would go right along with mi piace tu faccia. I like your face, huh?
Forget about it, eh?
Hey, tu molto simpatico. Okay, we are we're almost out of time. You want to tell everybody where they can find you, Freddie?
Yeah, you can find me on Twitter at Radio Freddie Cruz, on Instagram at The Freddie Cruz, and then my author website is TheFreddieCruz.com, TheFreddieCruz, TheFreddieCruz.com. And I really appreciate you all having me on your show.
Oh, don't go away. We're gonna hang out after the show. But you do have your podcast, which is Freddie's Huge Ask podcast.
Yes, that is the one.
Yes, under you can find it. That's ASK.
Yes, let's stress that
podcast. And you can listen to a lot of his older shows. Okay. Thanks so much, Freddie, for joining us. Don't go away. We'll be right back with you in a moment. But right now, next week, we have a double show. It's 2 hours. We'll be featuring Bob Sousa and Tom Lang, both retired LA City police detectives. Tom Lang, of course, was the one that chased O.J. down the freeway in the 405. When O.J. took off, he was the one that was the lead detective. And he and Bob Sousa were partners for years, and they worked on a murder in Wonderland called the Wonderland Murders in the 80s. That book is called Malice in Wonderland, and, of course, Tom's book is Absence of – what did I say it was, Richard?
Evidence Dismissed.
Evidence Dismissed.
Yeah.
And it's got a new couple chapters at the end. Extremely interesting. Tom and Bob will be with us next week. Richard and Bobby will be manning the second half of the show. Russ Avison and I will be manning the first half of the show.
And if you have questions about the OJ case, call in during the second hour because that's what we're going to talk about.
Right. The OJ case we're going to talk about the second hour. That'll be Richard and Bobby. And other than that, we hope that you enjoyed the show. Thank you so much again, Freddie. You were a wonderful guest. Wonderful guest. And we appreciated having you. And that's it for us right now. And from Bobby Jean, who disappeared, and who Jim the absent, and of course Richard and myself, Sam Hassan, who owns and operates the studio, LA Talk Radio, and of course without the bookie, none of this would be possible. Thank you, Jerry, and we are out of here.
You're listening to Writer's Block with Jim Christina and Charlie Nelly.